Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There is always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore ethically non-monogamous relationships, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of ethical non-monogamy in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion, with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hands down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own Lives on the Swing Set. Thanks for swinging by.
The OpenSF Non-Monogamy Conference only lasted 2 days, but it felt like so much more. How could so much have been packed into so little time? The OpenSF experience had a profound impact on each of us here at Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, with far-reaching implications that extend beyond ourselves. Tonight we're going to talk about it and debrief together for the first time since we parted ways in San Francisco. Welcome to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. I'm Cooper, and with me tonight I have...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger.
Hey guys, it's Dylan.
And this is Shira B. Katz.
Hey Shira, the listeners were wondering if you ever got that harness.
The one from Smitten Kitten Online? I did, and it's awesome.
That's good. I know a lot of them were concerned that you just kept wanting it.
Aw, I didn't mean to worry them. They should head over to smittenkittenonline.com and pick up something sexy for themselves, you know, like a harness or a dildo or a vibrator of their own.
Or all of those things.
Or all of those things. Because Smitten Kitten is one of the best sex-positive businesses in the industry.
And all you have to do is use the coupon code SWINGSET at checkout for a 10% discount.
You'll be glad you came.
So, anyone have any business tonight before we get started?
I have a little bit of business. I have two little bits of business. First, the transient is back, and that makes me really happy.
Very Yay! Nice.
The transient.
Yay. Yes. He's back home, and the world is lovely again. Also, I had my first girl kiss in, like, a really long time.
Oh. Yay!
Yeah. And I've done very well not to make shit complicated or weird thus far. But I feel like it's an accomplishment. Yay, girl kisses.
Yay, girl
oh
kisses
my gosh,
all around.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm very happy for you on both things.
Anyone else have business?
I asked a girl out, which doesn't sound too terribly exciting, unless you know, Cooper Beckett, in which case it's tremendously exciting.
I think anytime you put yourself out there, it's exciting.
I just think it's funny because from my perspective over the years of Cooper Beckett, when he asks girls out to fuck them, he's very easygoing and he does a very good job. But when he asks girls out to woo them or to get in a relationship with them, he gets really timid all of a sudden.
I don't know what Cooper Beckett you've been watching ask girls to fuck them, because I feel like I'm just as timid when it comes to you really only see my fuck wooing when it's with people I know already, and then I don't have any problem.
Fair enough. Although I've seen you work it out at a club before, and you didn't do so bad.
See, from my point of view, having known Cooper for maybe just under 2 years so far, I feel like you're asking people out all the time, Cooper. I feel like your anxiety isn't so anxious these days.
Well,
I feel like it is too.
I do have to realize at this point that in poly, especially, well, in poly only, but you know, in general, I have never been turned down when I've asked someone out. So at some point, I really just need to look at that and use that as the confidence I need to continue.
It is very, it's a lot lower stakes to go on a date with someone when you're poly, rather than to say, go on a swing date with someone.
I don't know. I kind of put a lot more weight to asking someone out to be in a relationship, because sex always seems relatively easy for me. I mean, when I've asked girls out on poly dates, I've generally ended up sleeping with them, which is kind of funny because it's an exception now that I don't sleep with a girl when I go on a poly date.
Yeah, he sleeps with the girls more on poly dates than on swing dates, so I think there's some barometer thing that's incorrect going on over there.
There
or I've been led to believe something that's actually not true.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, like, personally, if I knew I was going to have to put out for a date, I know it would be a lot harder to get a yes out of me.
Well, in fairness, nobody ever expects you to have to put out on a date.
Wow, you make it sound horrible.
Well, if it's like a first date, you're just meeting someone.
I don't even go into swing dates with that, it's going to happen.
Okay.
I'm going to have to.
Oh my gosh. I apologize for putting it that way. It's just, I know that first dates in general are kind of a getting to know you thing. And I assumed that the online swinger hookup was a little bit more, let's hook up and hook up.
Well, yes, it can be.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get in trouble.
Sorry.
That's it. Live tweeted.
Yeah, you know, actually, we may be getting a little bit more defensive than we should be. Or I should say, yeah. I'm getting a little more defensive than I should be. Listen, I love, and we'll talk about this more when we get, you know, past the business thing. But let's just
I'm on your side.
I got used to defending myself and us
against
to the poly
evil
people.
Poly. Yes.
No, not like that, but I did get used to, let's say, educating people more than not. So I apologize, Shira. You're on our side.
It's okay, and I might have been using insensitive language there. All I was meant to say was, if I knew sex was going to happen on a date, I would be a lot more choosy or a lot less willing to immediately jump into the yeah, where if it's just coffee or dinner or something, sure. I'll go spend an evening with anyone, really.
It's fascinating. I don't ever think to myself, oh, wow, there's going to be sex now. So I have to, I guess I'm missing the whole, like, pre-date expectation piece. Because, like, I feel like Shira, I feel like you do when you go out on dates and sometimes it ends in sex and I didn't realize it was going to go there.
Right.
So I wonder, I don't know what that means for me, if I'm just a naive swinger.
No, I think you've just mastered the expectations.
Okay.
You're playing the expectation game at the advanced level.
The advanced level.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I don't want to speak for Dylan, but I'm not there yet. There's always some sort of expectation. I can't squash that.
Well, I will say, just to, I think it was Shira that said it, that your anxiety is not so anxious anymore. I will say that in the big scheme of things, that it is true, the volume of asking out that you do, Coop, is up there.
Now,
it's up there.
Let me just, you know, talk.
Not in a bad way.
Let me just speak to that for a second, okay? As a poly person, I've
asked at you.
Three
Sorry.
People out.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
So?
So, I mean, I don't know if that translates as volume. I know Shira's asked more people than that out this year.
Gavin has been poly for 5 years.
Well, Gavin, we can't exactly judge this by
okay.
the barometer of Gavin Katz.
No, that's very fair.
You know, he gets the barometer of big cock. He does not get the barometer of male poly guy.
Well. The measure of a poly man is not by the number of dates he asks out.
It's by
this
the size of his cock.
But the point
in which
being,
case, Gavin wins.
Yes, he wins. Tell him he won.
Deal.
Okay.
The point being, Cooper, is you have asked out enough people, I think, in a short enough amount of time to put you on the pro list.
I'm a pro now?
I think so. And I also, I go back to what Dylan said, too, that, you know, the seeing in action at the club or at a party or whatever. I mean, there is a lot of practice in that. And I think that just looking at simply the amount of time spent in the non-monogamous world, that if you really look back on it, Coop, I mean, there's a good deal of practice there.
Oh, I agree.
And yeah, so I just think you know, don't sell yourself short when it comes to moving forward that you haven't made a lot of progress over time.
When one of the things that I'm trying to be more mindful of that fact, though, that I have had good success, and this is part of a new type of self-awareness I'm trying because that I started in San Francisco. Because, you know, you guys know, I went into San Francisco with an attempt to completely step out of myself. And, do things that I hadn't done before and think about things in ways that I've never done before and just try to go for what I'm interested in.
Well, Cooper, I know that you were really anxious on your way to San Francisco. Like, you had hyped it up pretty big in your head.
The idea of San Francisco and what it represents?
Yeah, or our presentation. That was going to happen. Everything. You were going into Cooper spiral.
That's a thing.
And so to see that you had shed a lot of that, enough to let yourself experience new things and kind of let go, was kind of inspiring. You should tell all the people about the stuff you did.
Oh, good Lord. We're going to lead with that?
You're going to have the best stories.
Well, so first I think perhaps we should apologize for the insanity that was episode 78.
I will go on record as absolutely never apologizing for that, because that was the most rockin', kick-ass, awesome couple hours of, like, that there was no match for that. So the fact that people got to, you know, may have had, you know, I don't know, take their earbuds out or turn the volume down in the car as they were streaming it or whatever. I mean, I can't apologize for that. Like, it was that great, and it was that chaotic, and so there it is.
Yeah,
but everybody else, you all can apologize if you want.
Absolutely not. I apologize for nothing, and. We've tackled a lot of serious stuff on the show, a lot of fun stuff on the show, and kind of a lot of depressing stuff on the show, just because it's part of life and it's part of what's going on in our lives. And you know what? We had a really good time, and I think we deserved a little bit of a, you know, hey, we're going to shoot the shit and have a good time, and to let people in on that. I think it's nice to let everybody know what we're like when we get together and what we're like when things are going really well. I think if we didn't do that, it would be omitting kind of an important part of, well, our lives and, you know, what doing this stuff is like.
I wasn't actually apologizing for the show, you know.
Yes, you were.
I was actually really apologizing for the insanity that was the last, say, 10 minutes of it, where no comprehensible syllables could be understood. That's really it. That's what I was apologizing.
It was just a mass of people watching Dylan cuddling things.
Yes.
And if you didn't notice, what happened there was I went into the bathroom and started talking over Cooper while he was yelling at me.
And he kept recording in the bathroom, and I, the editor, didn't cut it out.
That's right, you edited.
So really, who's the fool?
Exactly.
Who's the fool?
Maybe you should be apologizing then. That's right.
There. See?
Well, it's just it there was food, there was wine, there was, you know, clearly guacamole. Prof was spoiling us, and it got too festive. It just got too festive to be recorded, so we just ended the recording.
Yeah, we had to wrap it up, and then we could continue the Bacchanalia-esque session.
Right.
My bed at the hotel room there.
Right, because it did, I mean, that, you know, I think there was more beverage consumed. There was certainly more guacamole consumed. I know that much. And not licked off the bed.
Well, I'll tell you, that prep work that we did, that whole episode, again, just to brief you guys on that, everyone that's listening, we recorded that stuff before we actually did our session at OpenSF. And it was really nice to kind of cut back, relax, and just learn to love what we do and love each other again before we did that, because we were fucking nervous. Cooper was, you know, a little bit
a
nervous.
Wreck.
And Cooper was, okay, yeah, Cooper was a wreck. And I got really lucky, personally, because I got there and everybody that was running OpenSF was part of the Poly Asylum. So it was like coming home to me. I got to hug and kiss and love a lot of people, and I basically had my own personal tour guides for the whole time. It felt great to come back, but I ended up getting a second feeling of coming home after I got the pulse of the whole conference. But yeah, it was pretty chill for me, but seeing everybody else kind of come down and relax really felt good, and it kind of enhanced my own chill feeling about the whole thing.
I want to go on the record as saying is I didn't feel very nervous the entire time.
I didn't either.
And I think that for me personally, I felt so very unnervous about things because it was my hometown and all these people that I know. I feel like I knew like at least 3 out of every 5 people who were there. And it was really incredible to watch you guys all have such powerful experiences at OpenSF and get really excited about it. Because for me, the parties, you know, Love Triangle, Pink, Mission Control, everything that is, that all the events, all the people, that's just home for me. And I realized watching you guys how incredibly fucking lucky I am to have the community.
I want to speak to that for a second, because I spent the first 2 days in San Francisco thinking, you know what? I need to move here. And then the second 2 days in San Francisco thinking, you know what? San Francisco has plenty of people looking to make a sex positive experience and organize things. And you know what Chicago needs? That. So
that's
I felt
very true.
At the second half, I felt that whatever little I can do to improve Chicago's sex positive community and do things like this there or here, I think it's important.
It's very important. There's no doubt about that. And I will say to you, Shira, that certainly, I mean, it's pretty awesome that that's like your backyard, so to speak. I mean, it really is incredible to have just really soaked in the social life. And it's just awesome to just be there and see every type of person in every type of clothing, loving every other type of person. And it's just hot and awesome and sexy and makes me so happy to see people enjoying other people. And I agree with you, Coop, that, you know, kind of spreading that out across the country is an important piece of the work. And so there's that. And it's awesome that we can kind of go there and get our batteries charged and then come back to home and kind of do our best to hold on to that, as hard as that is.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that when I chimed in to you, Shira, saying I wasn't nervous either. I mean, I wasn't nervous because I knew that when we all came together on that platform in front of a group of people, it was going to be fine. It was going to be awesome, no matter how it played out. And what we had to say, whether it was structured moment by moment or simply a set of bullet points that we were going to riff off of, that either way, it was going to be fun and awesome and worthy of at least putting out there in the context of the conference. And I just wanted to say that was a big part of the reason I was never nervous, is because I knew we had it. Like, I knew that it was just going to be doing the show in a different venue, and that would be that. And that's how I felt it went.
I think Shira isn't giving herself enough credit, so I want to give her a little more. I know that this was your hometown and that you were kind of showing it off, and, you know, it was kind of old school for you because you knew everyone, but you really put on this huge smile when we started presenting and kind of almost became the larger-than-life personality of the group. I mean, I know Cooper is always the larger-than-life personality, but...
And I was huge.
Oh, yeah. But I think for a good 20 minutes of the show, including the first, like, 10 minutes, you were the... You took over that spot. You became the head personality, and you kind of ran things for a while. It was kind of neat to see, because I've spent a lot of time with you, but, well, relatively compared to, you know, everybody else, but you really did just go, hey, this is me, and you really kind of just stepped up and took control, and it was really cool to watch.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I actually still haven't listened to the live broadcast because I'm nervous. But so thank you. Maybe I could actually
you
go
should.
Listen
Cunning
now.
Minx loved it. Said we were smart and sexy.
Oh, yay!
I think she said sexy. I don't know. Maybe I just projected that.
And to you, Cooper, what you were saying earlier about, you know, wanting to live in San Francisco and then realizing that stuff had needed to happen here. You said to me, we're needed here.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree with you. We're needed here. And I ended up leaving the conference kind of being a little more radicalized and motivated into doing that here.
Me too. Yeah.
I think that's lovely. I think that's really important. It's one thing to have the whole golden bubble thing going on. It's great and it's easier and it's a little posh. I've had some really awesome people kind of paved the path before me. But to do what you're doing, to pioneer a really great sex positive space in a place that lacks it is quite noble.
Yeah, and not just the conference, but kind of a whole community, at least.
Right.
At least that's what I'm hoping to do.
One of the first things we did there, after spending time with Tristan Taramino and then hanging out in bed together, we went down and we got to meet a whole bunch of people who were in on Friday for the conference, even though the conference didn't really start with classes or anything until Saturday. We got to do a meet and greet with them that that allowed us to jump from table to table in this banquet hall and just get to know people. And it was really cool to be in a space with so many positive people and with so many non-monogamous people. I can tell you it was the most non-monogamous people outside of, let's say, the swing club that I've gone to that I've ever seen in the same place at once.
I really enjoyed the meet and greet, in particular for one reason, actually. Because I got to meet Peppermint's mom.
Oh.
Peppermint is actually a second-gen non-monogamous person. His mom was in the open relationship since the 60s. The 60s, guys. That's crazy.
That is.
That is 50 years of non-monogamy information. And so I asked Pepper, and I've been trying to talk Pepper's mom into doing a podcast interview.
Ooh.
With on pedestrian polyamory, or with you guys, I don't know, politics, whatever.
I think she'd be right at home in pedestrian polyamory.
But it was really cool. She was so very proud, and it was really neat to have her at the conference that her son put together.
Absolutely, and she has every reason to be very proud, because Pepper managed an incredible feat here. And I heard a bunch of times at the conference, and I don't know the veracity of this, but I've heard this is the largest non-monogamy conference in history.
The largest and the most covered in the media as well.
So there we go. So he put this together on a whim and a prayer and did a fantastic job at it and made it look easy.
And it most definitely was not. I got to talk with him both before and after, and wow, this guy. There's a reason he's not putting it on every year.
Yeah.
It would become his life if he did.
Actually, one of the reasons why he's not putting it on every year is because it's an expensive feat. And they actually came in a little bit under on the whole ordeal. And so they're taking donations right now. So if you go to open-sf.org/donations, and you want to support things like OpenSF happening again in the future, go and donate. Seriously, it's an awesome event. It did wonderful things for non-monogamy in the media. So go give them money. Get them back at least to flesh. They're not trying to make money on this. They just want to break even so they can do it again in the future.
Absolutely, yeah. I donated this afternoon. I can't recommend donating highly enough. So that was our PBS pledge drive moment.
Sorry about that.
To keep bringing you quality non-monogamy conferences like you're seeing here. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about how OpenSF has influenced our lives and our personal experiences in San Francisco for this insane weekend. We'll be right back with Life on the Swing Set, the podcast.
Hey there, Swing Set fans. In the podcasting world, ranking high on iTunes can mean the difference between some listeners and lots of listeners. Do us a favor and hop onto iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and submit a 1-to-2-sentence review. It'll take a few minutes, but it'll help us spread the word. If you're on a mobile device and want to listen to any of our episodes on demand, search for and download Stitcher, and our entire library will be available at your fingertips. Thanks for listening.
When it comes to online dating, you at home have a lot of options available to you. But we here at Life on the Swing Set recommend Cassidy.com. We've tried many websites in the past, and while most are adequate and some are even pretty good, the one that we keep coming back to is Cassidy.com. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, and most important to me, is ease of use. If you want to put a picture on your page, you know how to do it. It's intuitive. It's built in. It's Facebook for non-monogamy. Cassidy also has one of the most aggressive campaigns out there to get the most people all around the world onto the site. Right now, potential playmates are scattered throughout regional websites. Wouldn't it be awesome if they were all in one place so you could search one site and find absolutely everyone you were interested in playing with? Well, that's where the campaign for Cassidy comes in. Cassidy need not be your only site, but we recommend you give it a try. And if you sign up using the link on our page, you support Life on the Swing Set, so we can continue bringing you what's been called the best non-monogamy podcast out there. Cassidy.com. Okay, welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. Tonight we're talking about OpenSF, the non-monogamy conference that we all descended upon San Francisco, and some of us just, you know, lived in San Francisco already. And we got a hell of a lot out of it. And I had an incredible first day in San Francisco, I can tell you that, because first off, I got to meet Cherubi Cats for the first time.
Aww.
In person, and that
Aww.
Was awesome.
Thank you.
The B does stand for beautiful.
You're a charmer.
I have to concur, and it was very fun to meet you for the first time, and Gavin too. It was, I was feeling really lucky that we had had the time we did before everything else got rolling to just chill, the four of us. So that was a really fun time. I know that Prof feels the same way, that it was just like, wow, this, but it also felt very easy and comfortable right in that moment, like right from the start.
And it was impressively easy and comfortable, I think, because, you know, dynamics can easily be different in person. And we fell into exactly the dynamics you heard on episode 78 in that moment. And it was just awesome to be in that space. And so coming from that, then I met up with Miko, our friend Techno Geisha, who I'd been flirting with on and off, and we had a little Dom sub play, which was my first real experience being Dom.
Just to clarify, Ooh. This is like 6 hours into being in San Francisco, right?
I was feeling the San Francisco vibe.
Gotcha. Well, Cooper, who's afraid of asking people out.
Hey, I've been talking to Miko since February. Uh-huh. But that doesn't count as just, you know, it's like a six, you know, what is that, 4 month courtship?
Sir, I remember you coming with no expectations at all.
I had no expectations whatsoever. But she was heading towards her room and I followed.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome. So first Dom experience, and I only asked, is that okay, once.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Which is one more time than she would have liked.
Well, there had to be a little negotiation, yeah.
But that's only once. So that was huge for me. You know, and I've talked to a few people about this recently, and it's an interesting dynamic for me, the Dom space. And it's something I haven't quite been able to figure out with Marilyn, because, you know, it's probably a little bit of lingering Madonna horror bullshit, you know?
Aw, come on, you're better than that.
Actually, explain that to me if you don't mind. I'm
well,
not
it's,
sure
it's,
what you mean.
It's you don't do that to your wife who you really care about. It's that bullshit.
Oh, okay.
You know? Yeah. And so I've been having trouble getting to that point where I can let loose and be Dom with her, because I keep thinking about it that way. And, you know, what if it goes really badly and I don't like it at all and she doesn't like the experience, and then we have this really tense little thing going on that could have repercussions. So, I mean, these are the things I think about. Whereas I'm in a strange city with someone new who really likes this. I felt I could take the risk more.
I want to know genres, Cooper. Tell me genres.
Genres of
BDSM. What are we hitting? What are you exploring? I've told you all about my crazy spanky stuff. Tell me things.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I didn't even have my kit. You know, we talked about my sex toy kit on our last show.
Yeah.
And you know where that was? That was in my hotel room, in my drawer. You know, and so it was one of those things where it was just like we both kind of felt this needs to happen now. So that's interesting right off the bat. But then, you know, I knew what she wanted. She wanted she wanted to be told what to do. She wanted the rough treatment, you know? And so it was, and I've never quite been able to wrap my mind around the calling the girl the whore, the cunt, the do this bitch. And it's always sounded so phony coming from me.
But not when you're with someone you've never met before. I bet that really helped.
Well, that helped, but it was also interesting because it may sound phony to me, and it may sound phony to people who know me, but it didn't necessarily sound phony to her.
Mm.
So I think that was part of what allowed me to sort of leap into that. And it really did pull out that chameleon thing that I've talked about in the past, because once the ball got rolling and I was getting the feedback that I needed from her, which was clear enjoyment, it was then easier and easier to try these other things. Like I was taught by a friend back here the appropriate chokehold that doesn't actually put any pressure on the windpipe,
mm-hmm.
but feels mm-hmm. like there's pressure on the windpipe to the person being choked. So I did some of that, and that was cool. And she really dug that. Oh, and Shira, my first safe oral sex experience.
Awesome.
Oral How'd sex with a condom.
Tell me about it.
I couldn't tell.
Did you use the Shira B. Katz patented barrier BJ?
We didn't, actually, and here's why. Because my condoms were back in my room.
Okay.
So we tore open the OpenSF gift condom. But she had the Bad Dragon lube.
Okay.
You know, that company that has the weird, slightly frightening dragon porn. Their lube is amazing and bizarre, because like I've talked about how liquid silk looks like cum.
Uh-huh.
This Bad Dragon lube not only looks like cum, but behaves like cum.
Ooh.
Really?
So it's kind of stretchy, kind of springy, very slick. It's really unusual.
Does it get really watery when it's warmed up?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I highly recommend that people seek out the Bad Dragon lube, because it was fascinating. Though, I'm pretty sure we left a few handprints on the bed and the wall. Pretty sure of that. So it was a really interesting experience for me, and it was like slipped me over into the mindset of tell her what you want because she'll do it.
That's awesome. I think that's precisely where your head's supposed to be.
Yeah. The one regret I have is because we had to get ready for the pink party. And because there were people who at some point were going to start wondering where we'd vanished to, or assuming where we'd vanished to, but still wondering when we might, you know, return, we didn't have a lot of time for aftercare.
Mm. Ah.
And it was interesting that I talked about this on the podcast that we recorded just like an hour before this happened, about how I felt I would need more aftercare probably than the sub. And I did have a hard transition out. It wasn't like it was hard emotionally. It was weird because I'd flipped that switch in there.
Made it feel more transactional almost. It was like, okay, here's this hard sex and now I'm leaving.
No. Now, and now back to normal.
Right.
You gotta go be normal now. So that was unusual for me. So then we had this party, the pink party, their play party to welcome all of us to San Francisco, or welcome all the people apparently who live in San Francisco to the OpenSF play party.
Yay, sexy parties.
And what was cool is Miko and I went into this party, and we talked about this in the past, how we tend to rely on our significant others as a crutch, as somebody to talk to at parties. So we'll hang out with the people we know or our significant other, and we'll just talk to them the whole time instead of engaging. And so we walked into the pink party, and we walked into the lobby, and we said to each other, you can do this. Go talk to someone. So it was really cool because we both had each other's back there.
You're teammates. That's awesome.
We were on the same team. And that team was let's go get some. Which was cool.
That is cool.
Ginger, you vanished after we saw the Mayhems.
Yes.
We saw Maggie and Ned Mayhem demonstrate their liquid nitrogen play, which was fascinating.
That was definitely fascinating, and they're hot and fun, and we're super cute together.
I mean, and we'll be having them on our show in a few weeks.
Which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was really an interesting thing, because I'd never... Had you ever considered that liquid nitrogen could be part of your play?
I don't think that liquid nitrogen could be part of my play now, to be honest.
Hey, they told you very specifically how you can go get that for yourself.
Well, they kind of did, but it would be better if Ned did it. But yeah, it seems very unattainable, but despite that fact that he shared that it is attainable and you just need the right equipment and all that good stuff, I got to feel it.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
And although it was an interesting sensation, it wasn't the type of sensation that is super erotic for me.
Okay.
I
don't find cold very erotic in the first place.
I mean, it was a sensation. Yeah, and it was interesting. But what I thought was fascinating was after they finished and they were kind of milling about the room, and I was actually had a conversation with Ned briefly about it, and I was sharing that, you know, I thought it was cool and really interesting, but the sensation didn't, to me in that context, feel, I wasn't sure how I would work that in an erotic way to a scene. He shared that when there's like bondage involved, and I took that as me being in bondage because that's what it would typically look like, that it adds a whole extra element to it because you are the one, you're not the one who's responsible for kind of vacating it from your skin. Mm-hmm. So there's that trust factor, and I could see how that could lend an erotic edge to it if it was within a DS context or some sort of power exchange context as opposed to just the sensation play. So that kind of maybe sold me just a little bit more, but it was really fantastic watching them play with it. That was really hot.
For me, it was great because that was the first thing we really did there, was sit down and have this demonstration, and we got to watch this thing without having to still just mill around this place and try to figure out who we are in this space. You know? Sherry, you were in the liquid nitrogen demo, right?
I was. It was really exciting. I got to sit in between two of my favorite people.
Very nice.
And it was interesting. I mostly liked it because being the geeky feminist pornographers they are, Maggie Mayhem had like full on awesome bush going on.
Oh, I was very impressed with the bush I was seeing because I am a bush fan.
Yes. And I was also inspired.
It was nice to see.
It was also inspiring to see her remove liquid nitrogen from her husband's penis. I don't know if that's her husband, actually. I apologize. From her partner's penis with her mouth. That was good. That was awesome.
So that was an awesome start to the night. But then, Ginger, I quickly lost track of you.
Yes. Well, I think we went around and around. I think we had actually passed each other in various, all of us, like, in that context, in the hallways and here and there. But Prof and I were really pretty interested in the play space. And so we were kind of moving in and about the play space, trying to size up where we wanted to play and how we wanted to play. And really came to the, I don't know. We weren't sure we were going to play right then. And then we were, and I don't know, we were back and forth. And then it was like, oh, let's grab a drink. And then let's chat with this person. And then by the time we really were focused, meaning I was like, hey, let's go do this. There just was no space.
It was so, that's not true. We did. We were standing up. But there was still nowhere to fuck. It was just unbelievable. There's like a sea of writhing bodies and there's mattresses and what?
I saw the fuck monster.
I saw the fuck monster. I was willing to join the fuck monster, but there was no room. It was unbelievable. I'm like, seriously, can we open up another room for playing? Can we just lay a mattress in the middle of a dance floor? Like, it got to the point where I was like, seriously? So we ended up just like, you know, it was getting late. I was in the mood. I needed more space than what was allowed me.
That is an interesting feature of that particular club because it's only like one third play space, if that, probably less, like a quarter play space. And so you get the fuck monster pretty quickly if there's any significant amount of people there. And the fuck monster is a big writhing mass of human flesh with various tentacles of arms and legs and appendages and phalluses poking out of it.
Right. But they're not all engaging all together. I mean,
no,
there's
a
lot of coupling and triads and foursomes and all that stuff, but still,
if you're giving it a brief glance, as I tend to when I'm walking through that room, it just looks like one big fuck monster.
I guess that's the difference. I just stand there and watch. It's like one of my favorite things.
Oh,
but yes,
see,
indeed.
I'm new to that.
After, oh yeah, that's good stuff. But then, you know, there does get to be a point in the night where, you know, you just really don't want to engage on that particular air mattress any longer.
Right.
I don't know what else to say about that, but you know, you kind of have to draw the line and yeah. So anyway.
My experience wasn't very sexy. I took two people who were new to sexy parties in general. So I spent a lot of time kind of babysitting and socializing and, you know, doing the pollination thing.
That's fair.
It was fine, though. I did, however, get to glance at someone else's sexy time at the party.
Oh. Whoever could you mean?
Cooper.
Okay, so here's the thing.
I want to know about the pollination. What were you doing that qualified?
She was shaking her butt around and doing that dance
and saying, "If you want this, you gotta get a relationship on it."
Yes.
You can't just fuck me. You gotta date me first.
No. I was leading the unexperienced to new experiences, and so as a result, I wasn't in a place of exploration and sexy. I was in a place of, and here is this, and here is this, and we can do this here, and you know, it was interesting.
Well, cool.
Well, the place really felt like Short Bus to me.
Did it really?
Anyone who hasn't seen the movie Short Bus, you should go out and get it. It's on Netflix. But the play space was very similar to the play space in Short Bus. It was industrial and then welcoming, and the playrooms were very, the playrooms at the clubs we've attended are very, basic. You know, there's a whole bunch of mattresses with sheets on them, but the play spaces at this club felt like someone had put forth effort to make it
interesting.
A lovely space to be in, whether you're fucking or not. You know, there was nothing about the people were playing everywhere as the night wore on, but there was nothing about the space that felt like, oh, this is just where people go to fuck. It was very much that you can sit and hang out and have a conversation. You can sit and hang out and watch. You can be a part of this. You can do your own thing. It really felt like that. And that's what I really liked about it.
I love that place. Yeah.
So, yes, you did get to see...
I got to see amazing things.
Other first experience ever, which was being submissive. So within 6 hours of each other, I had this first intense dumb experience and then got to have my first intense sub experience. You know, I really tried to use up San Francisco as much as I could the first night, I think.
Its patrons.
Yes. Well, you know. So one of the cool things is there was this outside area, and this was where all the pot smokers also were, so I was probably getting a contact high. But this awesome little outside area was where Miko and I wound up, and one of my favorite things about being Cooper Beckett is having people walk by, stop, listen to my conversation a little, and then point to me in that, you're... You know, and so I met a few people out in this outside area, and I was so proud of Miko because she just went for it with this one couple and just was talking to them and getting engaging, and it was awesome. And then I had Miss San Fran Cuties sit down next to me and entice me with her bag of toys. And she carries the most amazing bag of toys. She has floggers, she has paddles, she has this thing that looks like a sucker with hard plastic on the end that's a little tiny paddle. She has these finger cuff things that have claws on them. Fascinating stuff. And in the middle of looking at her toys, she knows where I'm at from a sub position because she listens to the show, which is always unusual for me that I don't have to actually tell people what I'm into because they know. But she told me she'd like to tie me up back at the hotel, and that made me nervous. I'll be honest. I just met her. Tie me up at the hotel. That's a little frightening.
They're good people. I've met them.
Oh, and I wasn't worried about them specifically. It was just, okay, new.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And so I gave her a very non-committal answer, and I think she understood that I was giving her a very non-committal answer. And she told me that there was a BDSM space in the club, and I hadn't seen it, and I didn't know how I missed it because I thought that Miko and I had wandered the entire length of the club and experienced all the rooms. And so she led us back there, and we got to this room with the St. Andrew's cross in it and these other areas to be tied up to. And she told me she would like to put me on the cross and beat me. And now I don't have the luxury of being able to think about it until we get back to the hotel. So I have to make a decision, you know, which is scary. But I get this little voice in my head that says, you're in San Francisco. You've always wanted to try this. So I said, all right. And she was fantastic because she knew that I'd never done anything like this before. So I was completely at her mercy. And so she would constantly check in a way that didn't change the dom-sub dynamic. So it's not like she was asking me about doing something. She was telling me this is what I'm going to do next. Giving me the option, obviously, to use the safe word and bow out. But not doing it in that way, you know?
Yep.
And so I got heavily flogged. So much so that I was tingling for like 5 days.
That's the best.
Well, that was a very new experience to me. And I had no idea it would have that kind of staying power. So naturally, I assumed I was ill.
It was so funny because like 2 days later, Cooper sends me a text message. He's like, I'm pretty sure, I don't know, I'm freaking out a little bit. I'm having some tingling. And I'm like, well, Cooper,
I got
what exactly did you do at that party? And I explained to him the side effects of being flogged that heavily.
And I had no idea.
Yes, I think you checked in with me too.
I check in like, with both of you tingly, on a lot of things.
Tingly thighs? Yeah, that's about right. Sure. Sure.
I believe you said you feel like that most of the time, Ginger.
Yes.
So once you gave me that, then I was far more comfortable with the situation.
Yes. And isn't life good like that? I recommend it.
It is. Well, what the most amazing thing to me about this experience was being blindfolded the entire time. And this is throughout my adventures holding onto this cross and being beaten, as well as the sexy time that followed. Blindfolded the whole time. And I had no idea how much that slight bit of sensory deprivation fucks with you. Just time didn't mean anything. Or maybe this is subspace. Because a lot of time went by in a very short amount of time. I was blindfolded for, I think, 2 hours or so.
I don't think I fully understand subspace, like the actual feelings of it.
I feel like that's a really long topic, and I could do a lot of talking about that from my perspective. But
well, and what I found the most amusing is when I texted you to the next morning to tell you about my awesome experience. Both of you responded just about the same way. I know, I was there.
Yep.
And I did think I heard Shira's laugh at one point.
I did it. I tried not to.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying you were laughing at me, but I
might have walked into the room and then giggled with joy, I think, at the situation. And then I pulled Mr. SF Cuties aside and said, will you please let my friend know that I have said good evening and that I'm very happy for him.
He did give me that message. Okay, so, you know, we've talked a lot and we've really not even gotten to the beginning of the conference. Yeah, well, we'll have to get to that on another episode. So, in the meantime, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. You can follow us on Twitter at SwingsetLife, at Ginger and the Prof, at ShiraBeCats, at Dylan_SwingSet, and follow OpenSF at OpenSFConf. You can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. Give us a call, leave us a message, send us a text, 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And thank you guys for the most exposing of Cooper show I think we've done yet. Wide open. And thank you, listeners, for swinging by. Okay, so Life on the Swing Set is going to Desire from November 3rd through 10th of 2012. So just before the apocalypse, if you believe what you read.
Oh, you mean the election?
Yes, that one.
Yes, okay.
good. We can go out with tequila shots then.
That's
perfect.
Right.
Perfect. Right. In the sex wing. Even better.
We're going to be doing fun party-type atmospheres. We're going to be doing a speed dating thing. We're going to have a pole dancing lesson, some toy demonstrations. As you heard, we tend to like toy demonstrations. We'll probably have the Cooper there with you if I can smuggle it through Mexican security.
So, Cooper, if people are interested in joining us at Desire, how do they find out how to get there?
Well, we're going with Char Travel, and if you listened to a few episodes back, you heard them talk about how awesome sexy vacations are, and you can email them at info@chartravel.com. Or you can give them a call at 215-321-4451. Just make sure you mention that you want to go to Desire with Life on the Swing Set.
That sounds great. So if you're interested, please contact Char Travel and we'll see you there.
You're listening to a Swing Set podcast. Hear more at lifeontheswingset.com.